Emily welcomes everyone. I would like to thank those that helped with the program tonight. Nechama Meisler, Rina Bortz, Ahuva Jay, Rivka Hamelberger, Tova Lerman, Devorah Unger, Shani Gold, Esther Good, Hadassah Hollander, Esther Yair, and of course, Mrs. Simpson. And I certainly want to thank Mrs. Valasov, who's a sponsor, and Rabbi Gross, who's the director of development, for everything behind the scenes. We very much appreciate all of Rabbi Gross's support and all the work he does for Beis Yaakov as the director of development. Personally, I think that events like this are very, very important when we're in school, when we're in high school, whether you were focused on the academics or GO or any extracurricular programs in Beis Yaakov, your friends, that was all very important. But once you get out of school, I think the relationships are the most important. Life, as complicated as we think it is when we're in high school, life is way more complicated when we're out of high school and things come up. And those relationships with our friends and with our teachers are so, so important. So I hope that events like this help keep us connected to each other and to our teachers and really help us feel a part of each other and the connection. So Rabbi Zweig will speak and then Mrs. Vey will speak. So thank you everyone for coming.
Hello. How do I know I'm in Beis Yaakov? The front rows are empty. It's probably like that in every school. It's a real pleasure to be here. Spent the last couple of days looking at yearbooks to make sure I recognize everybody. Recognize most people, Baruch Hashem. I want to start by thanking Mrs. Leader, Mrs. Gross, and Mrs. Simpson for making all the arrangements. I want to tell you that Mrs. Leader, when she was in high school, was at the other campus, and I remember sitting with her in Rabbi Flom's office. I think she was a ninth grader, and she was telling me how to run the school and what I was doing wrong. Now she's a parent, so I get a call about once a week. She's gotten a lot smarter. She doesn't say what's wrong. She just tells me what could be better. But Baruch Hashem, she's full of creative energy, and we're so fortunate to have people like her who are helping arrange programs and giving us ideas. I want to say a special thank you to the teachers who went out of their way to be here. It's very much appreciated. I know you have a lot of other things you could be doing, and this is the way you continue to show your dedication and care for the students. I do think that we should mention that although this is Baruch Hashem, a Simcha Dikah gathering, there is somewhat of a shadow that is cast over our coming together, and that is, I think we need to mention the recent Patira Olenu of Rivka Sheen, whom we miss very much. Very tragic that she cannot be here with us. I saw in her yearbook, a beautiful, beautiful smile on her face, a really lichtige smile, and we hope that she is smiling that way now in Gan Eden, smiling down on us. And of course, we remember her, we will continue to remember her, and hope that she will be a Melech Yosher for all of us. As well, although this is not as untimely, nevertheless, Gvert Steinhardt's Patira is a blow for us, for Beis Yaakov. She was so many things. She was a truly unique person, and she will be sorely missed as well. I'm sure she would have been here tonight, shepping naches, being happy to meet everyone. And she also hopefully is looking down on us from Shemayim, and also is a Melissa Yosher. I was only given a few minutes. I'm not supposed to make a speech. I'm just supposed to welcome you. So I have here what could be a 30-minute shiur, 30-minute parsha class, but I'm going to condense it so much that you won't even know that it's a drasha. I think I can do that. I'm going to start by just reading a few psukim. Last week was Parshas Chukas. One of the most famous stories in the Torah, best known stories in the Torah, is the story of Moshe hitting the rock. And the Mefarshim go to town. The Torah is very vague about what Moshe Rabbeinu did wrong. And the Mefarshim go to town on it. Every Mefarsh has a different explanation. I heard in Shul the Shabbos someone quoted someone who said that Moshe Rabbeinu did a sin. Nebuch, poor Moshe Rabbeinu, when you finish going through the Mefarshim, you have about 30 different sins that are attributed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Poor Moshe Rabbeinu, the Torah is so ambiguous about it that everyone had a different explanation. I know that you understand Hebrew. I know you know the words of the Chumash, but for the sake of time, I'm just going to read the English. Otherwise, we could develop it, but I'm not going to do that. So this is from Parshas Chukas. There was no water for the assembly, and they gathered against Moshe and Aaron. The people quarreled with Moshe and spoke up, saying, "If only we had perished as our brethren perished before Hashem. Why have you brought the congregation of Hashem to this wilderness to die there, we and our animals? And why did you bring us up from Egypt to bring us to this evil place? There's no water to drink." Skipping a couple of psukim. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Take the staff, gather together the assembly, you and Aaron, speak to the rock, it shall give its waters. You shall bring forth for them water from the rock and give drink to the assembly and to their animals." And then we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, instead of just speaking to the rock, he hit the rock, and then Hashem said, "You have lost your chance to go into Eretz Yisrael." There's a question here that is not like the question begs itself. We beg the question of, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu did a sin. Did Klal Yisrael do a sin? There is no indication from the response of the Ribono Shel Olam that Klal Yisrael did anything wrong. If I had the time, even though I marked it off in this Chumash here, I would read you the similar story in Parshas Bishalach. I know Mrs. Gert Steinhardt's class gets to Bishalach. I don't know if Mrs. Wilner's class did. Same story of the water, similar story there. Hashem said to Moshe, "Hit the rock." Moshe hit the rock. And there also, the psukim are almost very, very similar. And you don't see Hashem in any way reprimanding Klal Yisrael. Neither do you see any type of reprimand in the story of the Mun. So again, I have it all signed out here. I have little papers here for the parshas, but I'm not allowed to talk too much here, so I'm just going to, you'll have to take my word for it. There's no reprimand. So did Klal Yisrael sin or not? Looks like they didn't, because there's no comment about that. There's quite a comment to Moshe Rabbeinu. It says in Tehillim, Perek Kufvav, Vayaktsifu al Mei Meriva. They provoked Hashem at Mei Meriva. Vayera al Moshe Bavorim, and Hashem had to do bad to Moshe for their account because of them. In Chumash Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu recounted this story, he said, "Gam bi hisanaf Hashem beglalchem." Hashem was very angry with me, but it was really your fault. The place is called Mei Meriva. The pasuk says, "Asher ravu bnei Yisrael es Hashem." They strove against Hashem. In Bishalach, it's called Masa Umariva, Ribbon Yisrael Hashem. So clearly, they did something wrong. In Parshas Baloschar, referring to comments of the Bnei Yisrael that are similar to these, the pasuk says, and Hashem said, "Yan ma'astem es Hashem." You rejected Hashem. You acted towards Hashem with faith, with hatefulness, by saying, "Lamazay Yitzhanim Mitzrayim." When you look at their words, at their speech, it's horrible. They turn everything upside down. Moshe Rabbeinu tried to do a tova for us by taking us out of a horrible place in slavery and give us such blessing, and they turn everything around. But there's nothing here in the pasuk that indicates that. Lest we say that Hashem never reprimands on the spot, it's not true. Because in Parshas Chukas, when they complained about the mun and said, "Nafshenu kotza belechem haklokel," we hate the mun, right away the Nechashim came. In Parshas Shlach, when they finished complaining, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, "Akenu badever v'orishenu," let me annihilate them. Parshas Korach, he said something similar. So why sometimes is there a reprimand and sometimes there's no reprimand? Such a good question. says the great and holy Ramban, a beautiful, beautiful analysis of the entire matter. He says, Hashem's response will depend on whether they are coming forth with wanton negativism, stop kvetching because you're bored and you have nothing to do, stop complaining with no basis, or where there is a real problem and you're uncomfortable and you're suffering. And if Klal Yisrael is suffering, even if they're doing the wrong thing, we'll deal with that later. They're suffering, let's deal with the problem, and Hashem will look away from their behavior because it's coming from something that is discomfort. It's coming from something that is real, that's really legitimate. So this is a very, very, it's a tremendous lesson for us. First of all, in everyday living, how do we deal with other people when they are reacting to us in a way that we feel is not really right, not really the way it should be? You have to ask yourself, what's it coming from? You have to see the context. You have to see the person. You have to see the whole picture. And I believe that overall, of course, we make mistakes. But overall, the derech of our school, Baruch Hashem, thanks to the amazing, amazing teachers that we have here, is that they look at the situation. We look at the person. What are this person's needs? What might be making this person unhappy? Why is this person reacting this way? There's a chazal that says, Ein adam nitfas b'shas saro. You don't prosecute a person. You don't incarcerate a person because of the person's behavior in a time of tsar. You have to understand, where is this person coming from? Some people might say that tsar or discomfort is a synonym for adolescence. I don't know. So the teachers here, the school, has this approach and has this attempt. Understand where they're coming from. The approach has to be an approach of love. Yes, eventually there needs to be accountability. But who is the person? What is the context? What is the need? That is what is front and center in the way we deal with our students. And we can learn from the Rabbanu Shlomim, this is the way we should deal with each other. This is the way we should deal with our family members who are close to us, to be able to tolerate, to be willing to look the other way sometimes, and be understanding. And the first response must be one of compassion and caring, and we should learn that from Ribono Shel Olam. And just one word that a beautiful and very famous idea from Rav Weinberg, Zichron Levracha, the Neir Yisrael Rosh Yeshiva, whose yard site is coming up in a few days, actually, says one other detail that helps and that is an enabler and empowers when you have the right attitude towards those who you are responsible for, towards those who you interact with, is that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu Parshas Chukas, speak to the Sela v'nasan meimav, and it will give forth its water. Later on, instead, Moshe Rabbeinu hit the Sela. It says, Vayetsu mayim rabim. This was not meimav. It was not its natural water. Rosh Hashanah said, if you speak to the Sela, when there is a communication that is one that is soft, when there is one that can be theoretically, in a sense, persuasive, when it's talking, when it's conversation, what you could draw forth from the person, which is what we try to do so much here in school, is meimav. What is this person all about? What is the contribution that is a natural contribution, how this person can be actualized? If all you're looking for is compliance, and all you're looking for is making sure everyone does exactly what they're supposed to, and you don't care about anything else, and your means is by striking the person, whether physically or figuratively, you may get mayim rabim, but it's not meimav. It's not what the person is really all about. And that's another lesson related to the other one that we can derive from this parsha. Just want to end very briefly with an amazing story that is the ideal, the classical mechanech of our times, the legendary Rav David Trenk, Zichron Levracha, who I was very, very close with. Mr. Zone told me in the car this morning, a story I have not been able to corroborate the details, that one of Rabbi Trenk's bachrim on Shabbos got hold of a car, got the keys. It wasn't clear to me if it was Rabbi Trenk's car, someone else's car. Drove a couple of miles to a movie theater and went to the movies on Shabbos. Nebuch, the boy, was in a very, very vulnerable state. Rabbi Trenk found out what was happening. He walked to the movie theater. He asked the ticket person outside, can I have permission to go in? I just need to speak to a student who's inside, and then I will come right out. I'm not going to stay for the movie. And the person gave him permission. He went into the theater. He spotted the bacher. He sat down next to the bacher. And he said to the bacher, please be very, very careful. The popcorn here is not kosher. The bacher got up from his seat. He walked back to the yeshiva a few miles with Rabbi Trenk, and he told Rabbi Trenk, I promise you, Rebbe, I will never be Mechal Shabbos again. That's Rabbi Trenk. We all strive for this. I personally would like to be like this when I grow up. We'll see. I'll try. But that's our derech. That should be our derech with each other, with our family members, with our friends, to learn from the ways of the Torah, from the ways of Ribbono Shel Olam. I hope you have a wonderful evening. It is really great to see you all, and we should have a lot of nachas in here, besuras tovas, and have simchas together. Good night.
Before Mrs. Vey speaks, I just want to ask that when Mrs. Vey finishes speaking, if you didn't fill out a door prize raffle, you should please do that. The door prizes are really good. We have three of them, so please make sure to fill out a door prize raffle afterwards. And also, after the speech, please feel free to socialize, eat, and we have a beautiful video as well that was prepared by Nechama, so you could watch that as well. I would like now to introduce Mrs. Vey, a beloved history and English teacher who's been teaching at Beis Yaakov for over a decade. As a Beis Yaakov alumna herself, Mrs. Vey is remembered by her students not only for her dynamic lessons, but also for her care and concern that she showers upon every student. Mrs. Vey.
Just taking it all in. I didn't get to talk to as many of you as I would have liked to before. I'm hoping some of you will stay a little bit after, so I'll really be able to say hello. Okay. Good evening. I really love seeing everybody. I'd maybe rather not be speaking, and I could just spend more time schmoozing, but I love seeing everybody here. One of the hardest things is when we have to say goodbye at graduation. And one of the best things is when I can see people after that and I don't feel like it stops there. So this is a really special evening. Originally, when I was asked to speak, the only reason my husband even allowed it, because he was like, no, don't do this again, bad idea. Not at something like this, but any speaking whatsoever, was because I had this thought in my mind about a book that I had been reading about women's communication and blah, blah, blah. And I had this speech all arranged. It would be perfect. And I did my research, and I came up with a great research paper. And everybody really wants to hear a research paper, right? Right. So I went back to the drawing board, and I looked again at the email, looking for maybe some keys, and it said, words of inspiration. Okay, and I thought, what would inspire you? I had forgotten the very first rule of writing and speaking, even though I'm an English teacher, which is know your audience. So I thought again, I was like, okay, who are you? As a teacher, I'm very lucky. I teach one or two grades. It's all people basically in the same stage of life. Everyone's different in their own way, but they're all kind of dealing with the same stuff, coming from the same place. Not so much here. All of you, especially with this kind of age range, are quite different, and many of you are in very different stages. Some of you roughly recently left SEM. Some of you, it's been a little while, right? Some of you are single, some of you are married, some of you have children, some not yet. So many people in so many different stages, on so many different battlefields. what you all have in common. Okay, so one, we're all women. Two, we're all graduates of Beis Yaakov, even me. That's kind of why we're here. And as I'm sure all of you realize, now that you're on the other side, having graduated Beis Yaakov, that part of the purpose of high school is to kind of prepare you for what comes after high school. It's the basic training before you go out to war. That, I think, is one of the key similarities. Regardless of our differences, different stages, different struggles, we're all fighting a war. And there are all kinds of battles, right? There's, you know, the one where you're getting ready for your date and you're putting on your eyeliner and you're being really careful and you're using the liquid stuff that stays on forever and it's great for 3-day anzac, and then it smudges. Okay, we all know what happens when it smudges and how crazy hard it is to redo it, right? Yeah, right, and the young man's supposed to be here any minute. Right. So then there's these other kind of battles that you face, like where you're trying to get out of the house in the morning and you got a really important appointment and you've got your baby on your hip and your baby spits up all over his outfit, all over your outfit. And you think, okay, battle, got it. I can still change his outfit, my outfit, and still get out of the house on time. But about that moment, the 3-year-old peeks in her lunch that you packed and realizes rice rollers do not work today for snack, even though you have a whole case from Costco. And then there are the other really big battles. We all know which kinds those are. The really big ones where you're waiting in a doctor's office, yet again, trying very hard to remember who's really in charge. Or the other battles where you have no idea what to do. And you're just trying to figure out, and you can't, and you kind of feel a little hopeless. So, how do you fight these battles? How do you fight a war? In a war, and in a war zone, you have to have a lifeline. In a war like we're fighting, we need to stay connected to our yadas, to each other, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is your lifeline? What does it look like? So when my husband and I were talking about this, he gave me a sefer. He said, here you go. This is where the answer is. Rabbi Lopiansky recently wrote a sefer called Or Chas Chaim. The English translation subtitle is Ben Torah for Life. He is really directing the sefer to men who are finding themselves in this situation where they're leaving a more Torah-centered environment for a more material environment. And his sefer is really talking about how they can survive, and not just survive, but actually thrive. We don't have to just hold the line in the battle, ladies. We can come home victorious. We can conquer lands we didn't even imagine were there. Like the lands of waiting on line at the Target returns behind that lady with the really big purse who can't seem to find the receipt. Or the other scary lands of trying to get slime out of the couch and the carpet and the child's hair. Or the lands where you've just been given some really constructive advice from your boss and you're trying really hard not to completely lose it in front of all your colleagues. We may not be men. We don't have the same roles. We don't have the same obligations. But I think Rabbi Lopiansky's sefer has a few ideas that we can adopt and adapt for ourselves as women. Three main points that I'm going to extrapolate from that sefer. One is society. He talks about creating our society. Luckily, though we go out to battle, and a lot of our battles are really private, we're not really going out there alone. Soldiers have a term called the sacred band of brothers, or sisters. We all know, or some of us have maybe heard about this stress response. Stressful situation, fight or flight. How many people have heard of it? Right. Kind of recently, there was a Harvard University study that actually identified another response to stress. They coined the phrase tend and befriend. The other studies with this fight or flight response were actually done primarily on men. Women often will respond to stress by circling the wagons, taking care of the people they are responsible for, be it their children, be it their friends, be it their family members. And then they befriend, meaning they build that support system for themselves to kind of help everybody get through that. It's why we're so good at organizing meals, especially lasagna and chicken and rice sometimes, for people who need it, or why we're really good at listening to our friend. I mean, how many of us have been there for our friend and we're listening to her on the phone while she's struggling with something really hard? That's why we're so good at it. As women, we naturally do this. We're building those communities. We're building that society. Whether it's through a chesed organization or a chabura or a vad, we're creating that society. It helps us to connect with our values, with other people, other women who share those values. These groups keep us engaged because they keep us committed. Other people have expectations of us, and we don't want to let them down. Kayla Casper recently graduated just this past June, and she spoke at the graduation dinner, and she had a great mushel. She talked about being a team, and when we're on the same team, we root for each other, and we support each other, and we cheer each other on. Our lifeline can be building that team. Two, seek guidance. Foster, nourish, invest in a relationship with a mentor or a rav or even a family member. Create that relationship. Again, we're really good at this as women. This is what we excel at. You don't need to call that special seminary teacher every day or every week, but check in. You know, even if you know kind of where your head is at, even if you know kind of what you might want to do, check in. That way, that person gets to really know you and know what you're dealing with and know what you're working on. My husband and I, every year or so, we kind of check in with our Rav. And very often the topic of a conversation is how much I should teach. Trying to find that like balance between working and family and making sure I don't overextend myself, blah, 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 right? And my Rav one time said to my husband, she needs to teach even just a little bit. It's her drug, she needs it. When we asked, we weren't like going with a major Shaila. He was able to give us good Eitzah because he knew us. We fostered that relationship with him. That person might have an insight you never thought of. They've seen stuff. And you know what's great? They see stuff with the unique lens of Torah, so you can kind of trust it. If nothing else, that person will have expectations of you. That person will remind you of Hashem's expectations of you. We all remember Yosef HaTzadik and what helped him on the battlefield with Eishes Potiphar, right? Remember? It was the image of Yaakov Avinu. Our lifeline can be seeking and being reminded of that guidance. 3. Daven. A little or a lot. Formal or not so formal. Every day. Moda'ani, a perek of tehillim, right before you get out of the car into that really important meeting. A bracha where you really focus on what you're thanking Hashem for. Informal davening at a red light, not just because you want to get there. I usually find it really helpful when the red light has turned green and I'm trying to work on not honking and being really patient and on the cuffs with other people. Mincha, or think about it. You've gotten through your whole day, you're exhausted. You were up late writing that paper, or doing that internship, or putting that baby to sleep again. Quick Shema, quick connection. Keep the lifeline of communication open. The first person I call when I'm having a really hard day, which actually happens often enough and has happened recently, if my husband's not available, I call my mom. That would be point number 2, seeking guidance, right? And along with many wise things she says, her consistent advice is talk to Hashem. Really talk to him. Whether you're trying to figure out the right outfit for the date, or you're trying to figure out whether you're going to marry the person you're dating, whether you're trying to keep your head straight so you can figure out what the next outfit you should put on you and yourself, you know, yourself and your child, or whether you're just trying to keep your temper down with the toddler who's on the floor having a meltdown. Whether it's figuring out the best use of your time in your day for today, or whether trying to figure out the best use of your time in your life. Ultimately, we have a general who's directing the war effort. We need to talk to him. Grab the lifeline. I think no matter what stage of life we find ourselves in, I think we can all agree that we're super busy. Yes? Who's not busy here, right? We run. And we can get kind of lost in that fog of war. It can distract us. It can drain us. We're all different people in different stages. And different things speak to us. Different things are available to us. Figure out which one works for you. Maybe it's creating the society that really speaks to you. You're the extrovert. Maybe it's seeking guidance from a mentor or a rav. Maybe it's davening because you're really more of an introvert. Maybe you're doing a combination of all three. There are only some ideas. It doesn't have to be big. It can be quite small. The key is that you keep holding on to that lifeline. You can't let go. It won't just help you stay alive. It's going to help you thrive. The email said, I'm supposed to be giving you words of inspiration. I can't really do that. Look around you at some of the women who are in this room. A lot of you are already doing those suggestions. A lot of you are already going to Shirim or reaching out or involved in Chesed. Look at some of the women around you. Find and create your own inspiration. Find what works for you, what keeps you connected to the source. I'm going to finish off with one story. One person in this room already heard this story today. Couple days ago, week ago, a huge truck pulled up at my house really early in the morning. And these two people get out of the truck and they start unloading a tree. Not a little tree, like a big tree. And it's a weeping willow, just so you have that image. My husband and my mother got together and they gave me a tree for my birthday. I love trees. I have a ton of water in my backyard today and a lot of the days. And a weeping willow would be perfect. And every morning I get to eat my breakfast and look out my big back window and watch and look at my weeping willow. And I got the maintenance guys and they gave me a maintenance information sheet of like how to take care of this tree, because I'm not good with trees. Their instructions said water it for 5 to 10 minutes, full strength, every other day. So I know I'm not good with plants at all, and I asked my mom, because I call my mom, because I seek guidance. And I said, and she's a good gardener, and I said, is this what I'm supposed to do? Let me make sure I've really understood this correctly. And she's like, no. No, you don't do that. You're going to take every other day, yes, but just turn in the holes, even just a drop, like a little bit, and let it sit there for an hour. Interesting. What's the difference? It's probably getting the same amount of water, whether it's in 5 to 10 minutes, which sounds so much faster to me and so much more efficient, or it's an hour. And then I remembered a story, two different stories I heard, but they were dealing with the same conundrum about trees. So one is, I don't know if you guys remember Superstorm Sandy, that like hit New York. And they found a weird phenomenon where there was this new development and the storm came through and some trees were completely toppled down. And other trees were totally fine. And they're like, okay, this doesn't make sense. It's the same type of tree, all the scientist people out there, right? Okay, so let's figure this out. Same type of tree, same time it was planted, same environment, same traumatic event. Why did some trees get knocked down and some trees stood up and weathered the storm no problem? I'll tell you the answer in a minute. Another tree story of trees falling down. There were some scientists who decided, let's go in the desert and try to build this special environment where everything will be perfect. It's called a biodome, right? Like a dome, and they'll put, you know, we'll create this environment for humans, plants, animals, and the trees. And after the trees got certain height, they noticed the trees were toppling down. What was going on? So in Superstorm Sandy, they looked to find what was the difference. There were lawns that were watered with watering systems, and there were lawns that the trees didn't have watering systems. With the watering systems, it was just a quick water in the morning, done. Those trees' root system didn't have to be extensive. It didn't have to grow deep. The ones where the trees had to work a little harder for the water, but they had to go deeper, they developed a more extensive root system, and that root system kept them grounded. So when the winds came, they didn't fall down. And in the biodome, the interesting thing they found was because the trees had never encountered wind, they also didn't develop a really fully a huge root system to ground them, and they also fell down. The trees needed the deep root system where they tapped into these deep waters, and they needed the winds too. Both of them kept the trees strong so that they could weather the storms and be even stronger. I think you can figure it out. What's your lifeline? Thank you, ladies.